I'll call the meeting to order at 5:03. Roll call, please.
Director Shore?
Present.
Director Zindo?
I'm here.
Director Perezio?
Here.
Director Rogers? Director Matthews?
Here.
Vice President Borja?
Here.
And President DeLara?
Here. Thank you. Okay, the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Okay, I see Director Zendel raise his hand. I'll take his as the first and Director Matthews as the second.
Yep.
Okay, so I will call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I think I'm supposed to call by name. I'm sorry. Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Perez Gil?
Yes.
Director Rogers, who has now joined us. And Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And myself, I vote yes. The agenda is approved. Okay, public comments. At this time, comments from the audience may be on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter of the district. The board has a policy of limiting speakers to no more than 3 minutes. The board cannot take action on these items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on agenda items when they come up for discussion and or action. At this time, Andrea, do we have any members of the public that would like to provide some comments?
I do not see any hands raised. As a reminder to the public, please raise your hand using the raise the hand button if you have a public comment for any item on the agenda. And we do not have any at this time.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a minute before we move on. Okay, very good. We will move on to the next item. On the agenda, we have number D, our Desert Healthcare District CEO report information items. I'll turn it over to our CEO to start with number one, with number one.
Thank you, Madam President. The first item is a commitment that we have received from IEHB to support the item that we approved at the last board meeting to support access to healthcare for Black communities in the desert. And IEHB has contributed $100,000 to that effort. So that will expand our ability to grant dollars from $400,000 to $500,000 for that category of access to care.
Before we move on to the next item, I do want to congratulate and to thank our CEO for reaching out to IEHP and for making a compelling case. And I also thank IEHP for partnering with us on this very important effort. So thank you. And I also see a hand from Director Zendel. Director Zendel?
Yeah, Conrado, I was just wondering, who else have you reached out to, and specifically the Kaiser Permanente community benefit people? That might be something they might be interested in.
I haven't reached out to Kaiser Permanente for this particular item. I did reach out to them in the past, and they were limited in the support that they were able to provide at the time, but I will reach out to them.
Possibly the Eisenhower Foundation?
Sure.
Just suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Is there any other board member that would like to have make a comment or a question on this information item? Okay, I see none. I will move on to number two.
All right, item number two, Senate Bill 977, Healthcare System Consolidation. This is a bill that was introduced, and there is information in the board packet in pages 4 and 5. This item is something that our legal counsel and myself, we have reached out to Assembly Member Eduardo Garcia to request or to express some of our concerns on behalf of the district. We had a conversation even with the Attorney General. The bill seems to be moving forward regardless of the concerns that we raised. I think the primary concern that we have is that healthcare districts already have a mechanism for approval of any transaction that it's done within or between health corporations, and that this bill will add an additional layer to that approval process, in which it confuses the process and grants the Attorney General more power than what the people have.
Conrado, can you give an example, a theoretical example of how that might impact us?
Okay, so I will start with questions from the board members, starting with Director Shore.
Thank you, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So one typical example of this would be that there is a transaction that it's offered to a healthcare district by another hospital system. And as they place that item on the ballot, the public might say yes, and the Attorney General might say no. So which one is right?
So it's limited to ballot issues. It's not limited. It doesn't affect what I'm going to call day-to-day transactions. If we were to do a transaction with Tenet Healthcare that does not require ballot-level activity, that would not come into play here. Is that a fair understanding?
Well, under this bill, any transfer of ownership, a lease, a purchase, any transaction of that nature.
Of ownership. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. Director Zindel.
I would ask counsel, is his understanding then that if this bill passed, the Attorney General would have to opine on this before it could go to the voters? Or would it go to the voters and then the Attorney General would bless it afterwards?
Well, I think that was kind of one of our concerns, Director Zendo, was the fact that you could have a scenario where these agreements or transactions are not typically finaled until they come before the public at the meetings, and then you would be placing them on the ballot in that format. And so you would have a situation potentially where it would be subject to the vote of the people, and then it would be looked at by the Attorney General. So you could have this kind of a quandary where the people vote and approve it, and then it's still subject to Attorney General approval. This historically has not been an area with public healthcare districts that are overseen by boards of directors, these transactions, and the people, and also have a bunch of requirements in the health and safety code that with respect to our restrictions on these types of transactions. So it could get a little complicated, and it's not clear in the bill at what point the Attorney General would be involved. Those were kind of the issues that we wanted to discuss with them, as what the Attorney General thought where the Attorney General would be looking at it. The response we got was basically, well, he could see a scenario where it would be placed on the ballot, and then during the period that it would be, it takes 88 days, of course, before the transaction would be voted on. But during that 88-day period, you might then have the Attorney General looking at it to approve the transaction or not. So
could it be like a proposition, though, that has to be approved by the Attorney General before it goes on the ballot?
Well, the problem with that is we could set it up so that we would not make the board would not make the final approval until after the Attorney General approves the transaction. And he seemed to be open to that kind of process and felt fairly confident that there wasn't a huge threshold that the new operator, potentially the new lessee of the hospital, would have to overcome in order to get his approval.
And just a follow-up to that, is this a bill that was initiated by the Attorney Attorney General? Is it something that he felt necessary, and did he say why?
Yes, it was, and it has to do with the healthcare system up in Northern California that he's had a few lawsuits with, and really it's been in the context of the Attorney Charitable Trust Division of the Attorney General's Office and their oversight of nonprofits. And now, historically, they haven't got involved in public healthcare districts. And now this bill, because of the broad language in the bill, it could be easily construed to include healthcare districts, and that was his intent. So it's a little bit convoluted in the sense it's an area that the Attorney General has, because it's more of a political process with public healthcare districts as opposed to nonprofits. It's an area that they have not been involved in. So we were concerned about that, because it does provide another layer of, if you will, oversight and approval that we don't have right now. And so we were questioning the necessity for it, given that these are transactions that are subject to vote of the people.
Very good. Any other questions, Director Zendel, before I move on to the next
one? No, thank you so much.
Okay, Vice President Borja, I see your hand up.
Thank you, Scott, for answering that last question that Dr. Zendel had. That was one of my questions, too. My question is, I guess, for the CEO about Senator Melendez. If this bill has been brought to her attention, I feel like this would be something she would definitely side with us on. Just curious.
Well, I think it's a difficult situation for the lawmakers, because the bill itself is not objectionable. It's just an additional oversight to ensure that the community, that these types of transactions benefit the community. It just comes up in a political context more so than in a nonprofit or a public benefit corporation context, which has historically been where the Attorney General's role has been involved in. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. I know that there are senators that are against this, but it does look like this bill is moving forward and has the consensus of the legislature. I know ACHD is against it and is trying to do what they can to get it amended or a change to clarify that it doesn't apply to healthcare districts.
Her conversations on public government oversight may merit us reaching out to her and having a conversation about this bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Can you please note that request from Vice President Borja? Okay, I don't see a hand from Director Rogers, but I can't see Director Matthews. So Director Matthews, any questions or comments?
No, I think.
I had my hand up.
Oh, okay. I'll be right back to you, Carol. I'm sorry. Director Matthews?
No, I'm good. You can go back to Carol.
Okay. Director Rogers, I didn't see your hand up. I apologize. Go ahead, please.
It's okay. I think everybody is missing the mark on this bill. It essentially is to protect the interests of the community and wards against unscrupulous behavior by healthcare conglomerates like Sutter Health, which I had the honor to fight through lawsuits that lasted many years when they tried to close our community hospital. Worked with California Nurses Association. We lobbied Kamala Harris, who was the attorney at the time, to take this exact action. And it's the purpose of the legislation is to prevent hospital systems like Sutter Health, and Tenet is also a party to the objection to this bill, prevent unscrupulous antitrust monopolistic behaviors, which are the signature of healthcare systems in this state. I want to read to you a letter that I've written to be put in the record, written to Honorable Eduardo Garcia. The purpose of this letter is to offer my support of SB 977, the healthcare consolidation bill offered by Senator Monning, now being considered by the Assembly. I'm writing to you as an individual on the healthcare district board of directors. This bill protects California's medically underserved population by ensuring the oversight of any healthcare transactions by the Attorney General. I'm sorry, California has seen large numbers of hospital mergers and acquisitions that lead to monopolistic and anti-competitive behaviors by big corporations that operate these systems. I have had direct personal experience with these practices. As a director elected to the Eden Healthcare District in Northern California, my board sued Sutter to prevent the closure of our community hospital, which was done to allow their nearby medical center to operate without competition. This same hospital system, which previously promised local control, in quotes, to the voters to allow it to acquire the hospital from the district, moved local control to corporate headquarters in Sacramento. Their history of anti-competitive behavior continued with Marin General, Santa Rosa Memorial Hospital, San Francisco, and now Alta Bates in Berkeley. I'm currently helping the medical staff at Crescent City to fight the closure of their essential emergency room services. My board then appealed to the Attorney General to help to step in and prevent Sutter Health from hospital closure. I applaud Attorney General Becerra for his activism in this regard and to Senator Manning for the sponsorship of this legislation. I request you support it as well with my signature. I think that we need to look at this bill as something that protects our community and something we should get behind.
Thank you, Director Rogers. Director Perez Gill, I don't see your hand. Do you have any questions or comments at this time?
No, I don't have any questions or comments at this time. Thank you.
Okay, so our CEO, you mentioned that, that I'm not sure if it was you or Jeff, but I believe there was a mention that that this bill seems to be moving forward. Is there any action that the board as a whole should take at this time? Or is there nothing other than information?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just information for the board at this point.
Very good. Any questions or comments from the board members before we move on to the next item? I see no hands, so we will move on to the next item.
So the next item is an information item as well, is about the California Senate Bill 758, which was introduced by Senator Portantino. The early version of this bill tried to expand the deadline for seismic retrofit and create a new commission to understand what were the needs of hospitals in terms of their seismic retrofitting. The deadline initially was estimated to be 2000, or was proposed to be 2037. It has faced some challenges in the legislature, and the newer version of this bill only extends that deadline for 2 years to 2032, and it also dropped the formation of an advisory committee. The staff and the legal counsel, along with board chair, coordinated efforts to submit letters of support when the SB 758 was passed to the Assembly Committee on Health. Assembly member Chad Mays was very supportive of the district position. And we are enclosing a letter of support that we sent to Assembly member Chad Mays. Any questions?
Thank you. I'm gonna ask questions for questions or comments from board members. Hands, show of hands. Okay, I don't see any hands, but I don't see Director Matthews. Director Matthews, do you have any questions or comments at this time?
No, I don't.
Okay, Director Perez. Okay, Director Perez Gill, any questions or comments at this time?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to the next item.
The next item. Can I see the agenda, Andrea, please? The next item is the COVID-19 federally qualified health centers testing antibody updates. As you may be aware, the situation with COVID-19 is far from being controlled. One of the conversations, I have been following the process of implementation of COVID-19 testing by our local community clinics. And we have biweekly phone calls to discuss items, issues that they're facing. In one of our last calls, one of the concerns that was raised is that typically a COVID-19 PCR test takes about 3, 4, 5 days, sometimes even 7 days to have the results back. In the meantime, people that are being asked to be quarantined are not following those procedures of physical isolation. And we suspect that it's because the length of time that they have to wait to obtain the results of the test. So there is a new technology that was available earlier this year when the pandemic broke, and it's Abbott ID now. It's a fairly accurate test, and it reduces the waiting time from days to only 5 to 13 minutes. We have a window in which the test has become available to community clinics, and the grant that we gave to Borrego to share with the other clinics has some funding available that they haven't used, and they will be proceeding to purchase this new technology. So this will be very useful to our community because it's going to shorten the length of time that people have to wait to get the results of the COVID-19 tests. So I wanted to share this with you. It's very likely that the news will pick up on this piece of information. It's very encouraging piece of news. I have also reached out to the Department of Public Health to make sure that we are coordinating these efforts with them and that we get the support from the Department of Public Health with contact tracing, as this will shorten the length of time for the results.
Very good, thank you. Questions, comments from our board members on this item? Director Zendel.
Well, I very much support the idea of rapid testing. I think I'm glad that the federally qualified health clinics are gonna use the money that's left for that. To me, the bigger issue is why isn't this being made available to everybody in the Coachella Valley? The only way you can do adequate contact tracing is to have rapid results. Not necessarily in 20 minutes, which is great, but at least in a couple of days. As you know from reading the paper, lately some of the turnaround time has been in multiple days, if not more than a week. And there's no way you can do contact tracing adequately under those circumstances, especially since you're telling the person to go quarantine for 10 to 14 days. And then what are you gonna do? Come back to them after 8 days and say, oh, by the way, your test was negative, you don't have to quarantine, or it was positive, you got 2 more days. It really doesn't help us find the tracing. So I do support this, and my message is, I hope the county and the other people make it available for everybody in the Coachella Valley and the county.
Thank you, Director Zendel. I don't see Director Matthews. Do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't.
Okay. I don't see Director Rogers. So do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Director Perez-Gill, any questions or comments?
No, thank you.
Okay. My only comment is that if the news doesn't pick it up, maybe we could send out a press release because I think it is newsworthy. So next item.
Thank you. The next item is new business, LAFCO. LAFCO sent a letter saying that they're commencing a new appointment process for an alternate member of the Riverside LAFCO, and the selection proceedings will be conducted by electronic email, specifically the alternate position. We, a special district, have the opportunity to nominate one of our board members to be considered for this alternate position, And this requires a board resolution, which we have included. We previously had a process in which we were nominating one first person and one second person, or a runner-up, and we wanted to bring this to your attention and make the determination of which board members we want to nominate for this alternate member position.
Can you remind me what happened last time? Didn't we go through this a couple months ago?
Director Zendel, you have a question?
Yes, we did. And we nominated our director, Karen Borja, and our director, Arthur Short, both to be placed on that ballot, but they were not selected. So I don't know how this new opening happened, but we received this letter.
Director Short?
Point of information. So I am, as we sit here today, I am not currently an alternate, if I understand you correctly. And my second question is, how many positions are we planning on nominating at this time?
It is only one position.
Okay. And I am not an alternate as we sit here today.
That's correct.
Thank you very much. I am happy to cede my second position to Director Borjas, with pleasure.
So that's your motion? To nominate Director Borja, Vice President Borja?
With all due respect to her stature, I would like to nominate Director Borjas.
I second.
Okay. Director Rogers seconded. Is there any questions or comments from the board members? Is there any comments from the public, Andrea?
We do not have any public comment.
Very well. Okay, so I will call for the question. All those in favor? Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Perez Gil?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes. It is unanimous. Next item?
Thank you. Corrado, you're muted.
I'm sorry. The next item, I will have to recuse myself because of the potential perception of a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. So I will leave Donna to lead this item, and I will move from Zoom and will dial back.
Okay. So this is item E2, consideration to approve mini grant number 1132. Vision and Vision y Compromiso, the Promotora Census Outreach Project in Coachella Valley for $5,000. I'll turn it over to our program officer.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam President. This is a mini grant application that has come through for $5,000. As you know, the deadline for the census has been moved back from October 31st to September 30th. So there's a large push on to get as many people educated and outreach to complete the census. And Visión y Compromiso has got a very robust promotores project. They are familiar out here in the Coachella Valley. And so the grant funds will be used to support the promotores to do this work going out for outreach and education. And that's it. And I believe Debbie Maria Lemieux Lemus, who's the executive director, and Debbie Arthur may both be on the phone. I'm not sure.
Well, I have someone on the line as well that if there were any questions or concerns, can you please repeat your name?
Yes, this is Maria Lemus. I'm the executive director of Vision y Compromiso, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, questions or comments from board members? Starting, I see any hands, please raise your hands. Okay, Director Zendel.
I'm very supportive of any effort to increase the census reporting. I guess I have a question for council. Attached to our agenda, starting at page 81, is the health and safety code, which goes through all the things that the district is entitled to do. And I'm just, as I go through this, I'm wondering if this fits anywhere in that. And I guess I would like our council to reassure me that it is permissible for the district to spend money doing this. You're muted, Jeff.
I'm muted, Jeff.
Yes, no, I think it's fine. This is, it's the focus is to try to provide health care to more and more citizens. And so I think, the census is an important part of that and will help the residents, I should say, of the district. And so I don't think that there's any question that this doesn't have a healthcare related component to it.
Okay, then I feel that since my council says it's okay, I'm very supportive of this.
Director Shore.
If I understand correctly, the detail of this proposal is among pages 17. As I looked at the detail of this proposal, I understood it to mean that the retention of three individuals to engage in phone activities, of which I'm 100% in favor of. But in the detail, there's money being allocated for travel expense, automotive expense, and I don't see how that connects in this instance.
Director Limas, Executive Director Limas, are you there to address that question?
I'm looking at the budget. And it really, the majority of the money, except for $535, goes to their salary. I don't see any travel costs in here.
Well, if I can reference people to page, let me get the page. I think it's page 17 of our packet. Let me just make sure I'm right before we go there. Page 17. The proposal suggests $6,000, but that's, and now I'm seeing five, but there's a travel mileage expense of $1,680, requesting $1,000, I think, from us for that purpose. And I just don't understand why any money would be allocated to travel expense. I'd like to see it all go into, all the appropriate funding go to support the individuals, not, this doesn't connect to me. So I need a better understanding.
Director Shore, if I may, it is written in the grant application that they are looking where the mileage would come into play, is also exploring opportunities to distribute door handles and other information, door hangers and other information.
So there are issues that require travel.
Yes.
Thank you so much for the clarification. It wasn't obvious to me from the text.
But on that clarification, it did say also that there was another funder that would cover the mileage costs. But is there any other questions from directors, comments?
Just a quick comment.
Vice President Borja?
Just a quick comment. The communities of the Coachella Valley are just now this week reaching 50, literally today, reaching 50% of census completion. We are the furthest behind in history than we've ever been in the last 230 years. So Visión y Compromiso genuinely appreciate the fact that you're willing to go out into our communities in 115 degree weather to knock on people's doors and ask them, doing social distancing to complete the census. I think this work is not just needed, but obviously very important. I would like to motion that we approve this $5,000 grant to Visión y Compromiso to do their census outreach work.
Matthews is second.
Dr. Matthews also has had his hand raised for a comment as well.
Yeah, well, let me second the motion to begin with.
So, okay.
I think I got my answer. I understand the $5,000 is the total amount. The $680 could be mileage, could be printing, could be, and then there's expenses coming from elsewhere. So I think I've got my answer. Thank you.
Director Rogers, do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Director Perez Gil, do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't. Thank you.
We have a motion on the floor and a second. Is there any questions from the public or comments from the public at this time?
I do not see any hands raised.
Okay, then I will call for the question. Director Ashore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Perez Gil?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes, it passes. Next item is...
Somebody want to text Conrado, you can come back.
Yeah, let's come back in and
go invite him back. I don't understand his conflict of interest. Is he involved in the census or something?
His wife is somehow connected to the organization.
Oh, okay, great.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Director Limas, for joining us. Okay, so next we have legal, number F, legal, and that is consideration to approve resolution 20-04, conflict of interest code approved at the March 24, 2020 Board of Directors meeting. This is an action item. I will turn it over to our CEO to, is he back?
Do you want me to go ahead?
Yes, Jeff.
It's just state law requires that in every even numbered year, the district's conflict of interest code needs to be reviewed and updated if necessary. And we basically adhere to the model code. And this year's code has been reviewed. And there are a few small changes which are reflected in the red line version, which is in your board packet. It's simply revisions to the approval date. The designated staff section has been revised and reflects the current organizational chart. And just for your information, model code has raised the gift limitation from $470 to $500. So this is kind of a ministerial act, but we have to do this under the law every 2 years. And we've reviewed it, and the changes are before you, and would request that you adopt resolution 2004 approving the 2020 amended code.
Is there a motion on this item?
Yeah, Matthews moves for approval.
Okay, is there second. A second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Director Matthews, second by Director Shore. Is there any comments from the public, Andrea?
There is no public comment at this time.
Okay, do you have any questions or comments from any board members? You could raise your hand. Okay, Director Rogers, any questions or comments?
No, I have none, thank you. Okay,
Director Perez Gil, any questions or comments?
I have none at this moment, thank you.
Then I will call for the question. To support the motion to approve this, Director Shore.
Yes.
Director Zendel.
Yes.
Director Matthews.
Yes.
Director Rogers.
Yes.
Director Perez Gil.
Yes.
Vice President Borja.
Yes.
And I vote yes, it passes unanimously.
Excuse me, President DeLara, just so that our all the board members know, we do have a representative from the media that is our meeting, that has joined the meeting.
Thank you. Okay. Very well, next item is number two, consideration to approve resolutions 20-05, 20-06, and 20-07, requesting that the Board of Supervisors appoint President DeLara, Zone 7, Director Shore, Zone 5, and Director Zendel, Zone 1, to terms ending in 2024. I will turn it over to our CEO to, or if he chooses to talk to Jeff.
If you want me to take that, Conrado?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. Well, first, I'd like to congratulate Director Zendel, Director Shore, and President DeLara. Each of you filed your declaration of candidacy in your respective zones for the terms ending in 2014. Congratulations. No other individuals filed a declaration of candidacy. This is one of the things that happens when you go from an at-large voting district to a zone or division voting district. I think of the 13 board members that I represent that are running for election this year, eight are actually going to be appointed and will not run for election. So that does have certain advantages sometimes. We'll be able to save some substantial amount of funds, district funds, because we won't be conducting election. Under the state law, when this occurs for special districts, that's different than, say, for example, the city of Palm Springs. It's a chartered city. They have different rules that govern them as opposed to special districts that don't have policing powers like the district. We're governed by the Uniform District Election Law. And under that law, when this occurs, the individuals are appointed in each zone who filed a declaration of candidacy. And in essence, the election is canceled. And we have three separate resolutions, which basically would go to the Board of Supervisors to make sure that they do what they're supposed to do in accordance with the election code provisions. And so those are before you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Can we move all three of them at once, or do we got to take them one at a time?
Take them one at a time.
Okay.
Director Zendo, I see a hand up.
Yeah, for future reference, will these three lucky individuals be considered that they were elected or appointed in terms of future designation?
You are considered elected. That just as if there you had been elected to office, your certificate from the Registrar of Voters will be the same that you received if you've gone through the election itself. The big thing here is when it comes to special districts, there's a cost savings for both the Board of Supervisors and the district in not having to go ahead with the elections in these divisions. But for all intents and purposes, Director Zendel, it's the same thing as if you had head ran. It's just in this case, you're unopposed.
Thank you.
Okay, so next we have Vice President Borja, followed by Director Shore. You had a question?
Minor comments. My comments are that I am not in favor of these resolutions. With the Measure BB expansion, the expansion was meant to allow for popular representation through the ballot after the initial appointments. Through my work doing Measure BB voter outreach, we engaged over 3,000 people in the eastern side of the Coachella Valley and had conversations with them that they would be allowed to vote for their representatives. I'm not in favor of this proposition. I think Mayor Pro Tem Christy Holstage from Palm Springs, when this conversation was brought up to them, maybe had another good point, right? She says, in part just to uphold the transparency of our election process, let's go on with the elections. And that's where I'm sitting with these propositions. I just had to make my concerns public.
Thank you. Director Shore.
Well, I might address that. I mean, I appreciate that, Karen. I think the issue though is that this is not, we don't have really any choice in the matter. We could not continue with the election based on the election code laws relative to district elections. It's not, we really don't have any choice in the matter.
I think the other thing that I forgot to mention that to me seems unfair in this process, and I know you've answered it to me directly, Scott, but I think it's for the public to know, is that write-in candidates do not have an opportunity to contest these seats. These districts are fairly new. Someone could win with just a couple of hundred votes. We've seen it in the past in City of Coachella elections that some things have passed with 55 votes, right? So I feel that this proposition also makes it unfair for anyone wishing to have been a write-in candidate to any of these three districts.
Thank you. Okay, Director Shore.
Jeff, I have a mechanical question. Upon registration of intent to vote, we were required to submit a $750 deposit. Will that or any portion of that be refunded?
I don't believe so. I think that goes to the county.
Actually, that's not.
We'll be refunded. That's incorrect.
Okay. Well, then I stand corrected.
They won't cash the check. They're holding the checks, and okay. They will be returning the uncanceled check to us.
Well, then I stand corrected on that issue. I hadn't had that question before. I figured they just keep their money, your money. But great.
Thank you.
And by the way, Carol experienced that 2 years ago, isn't that right?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
And she got the money back.
Okay. Do we have any other questions or comments from board members? Director Rogers, I can't see you, so I'll ask you directly. Do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Director Perez Gill, any questions or comments?
No, I don't have any questions or comments at this time. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll start off with the first item, 20-05.
President DeMar, we have public comment after
And I have one more question.
Right back to you, but I just want to explain that since Jeff said that we had to take one individually, so I'll ask for a motion on each one and then provide an opportunity for public comment on each one. Is that okay? Okay, Director Zendel.
Could you tell me, somebody, approximately how much money will be saved by the district by not having to vote on this?
Well, in talking to Chris, based upon the election costs of Carol's district, I believe it was approximately $120,000. So I think in round figures, we're probably saving about $300,000.
Any other questions or comments, Director Zendel, before?
Nope, that's it.
Is there a motion? I'm going to ask for a motion.
Matthews will move resolution 2005.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, is there any public comment on resolution 2005, Andrea?
We do. Go ahead, Greg. Greg, are you there?
Yes, Andre, I think you cut out. I just didn't hear you.
Okay.
I just wanted to comment on Director Borja. I understand the sentiment, but again, election law pretty much determines this. It's common practice. I would also say that if no one decided to challenge these three, and rightly so, in my opinion, a write-in campaign would not be successful. They really never are. But really, additionally, the cost savings, not only to the district, but to the county. As everyone is aware, our whole election system is changed this year. And so every amount that we can save to actually be able to redirect to voting centers, to get out the vote efforts, and voter education is critical. So I would urge approval of these three resolutions. Thank you.
Any other public comment on that item? Andrea?
No, there is no further public comment.
Are there any comments or questions from the board members on this item? 05? I see no hands. Director Perez Gill, any questions or comments?
No, I don't have any questions right now. Thank you.
Okay, Vice President Borja, I see a hand.
If this resolution passes and we do save $300,000, can we set aside at least 30% of that to do, it doesn't have to be 30%. Can we set aside some percentage of those funds to do voter outreach and voter education around the Desert Healthcare District in the zone that will be up for election?
Is that allowable? Is that within our, Jeff, I'll ask whether that's allowable.
Well, I mean, I think that we would have to be careful. We'd have to look at exactly what we're doing for informational purposes and things like that. We can do outreach. That's an appropriate expenditure, but we want to be careful about it.
So is the maker of the motion and the second, are you the maker of the motion? I'll start with you. Is that something that you would want to include in your motion?
Point of order. I don't think it's appropriate. We're voting on a resolution and you can't really add to the resolution. That is about sending this to the county. Okay. I mean, so, we could take up a separate motion to do exactly what Vice President Borja wants to do, but not in the context of voting on these resolutions, okay, is my opinion.
Vice President Borja, is it okay if you withdraw that and look for an appropriate time to bring that back? Immediately after, maybe after we do all three, that you could make it, okay? Okay, so I see Director Matthews with a hand up.
Yes. I vote yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, that was my hand on my hat.
Okay. Put our hands on our head.
Yeah.
Okay, so Director Zendo, you said yes, right? I'm sorry?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Okay, Director Rogers, I'm sorry, I lost track of where I was. I think Director Rogers, did you, your vote please? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, Director Perez Gil, your vote?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
No.
Okay, and I vote yes. Okay, so now we move on to the next item, which is 20-06. Is there a motion on the floor?
Matthews will move 20-06.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Is there any public comment on this, Andrea?
There is no public comment.
Is there any questions or comments from the board members? If you could raise your hand, I'll call on you. Okay, Director Rogers, I don't see you, so if I can, do you have any questions or comments?
No, and I don't know why you can't see me.
I'm sorry. And Director Perez Gil, do you have any questions or comments?
No.
Now you're back, Director Rogers, so I can see you now. Okay, so I will call for the question, for the vote. Director Zendel.
Yes.
Director Matthews.
Yes.
Director Rogers.
Yes.
Director Perez Gil.
Yes.
Director Shore.
Yes.
And Vice President Borja. Vice President Borja.
I think she got disconnected.
Okay, so I'm going to vote yes. Okay, so that passes. The next item is 20-07. Is there a motion on the floor?
Yeah, Matthews will move 20-07.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Okay, Director Perez Gil seconds. Is there any public comments on this item, Andrea?
Not at this time, no.
Okay, any questions or comments from the board members? You could raise your hand. Okay, and Director Perez Gil, do you have any questions or comments?
No, no, okay. Thank you.
Director Rogers, I can't see you again, so do you have any questions or comments?
No questions or comments.
Okay, Vice President Borja.
Sorry, I lost you off for a second. We're still on the...
We're on the last one. We're on 07. You have any questions or comments on this one? Or
no.
Okay. So then I will call for the question for the vote. Director Shore.
Yes.
Director Zendel.
Abstain.
Director Matthews.
Yes.
Director Rogers.
Yes.
Director Perez Gil. Director Perez Gil.
Yes.
And Vice President Borja.
Yes.
No.
Okay, and I vote yes. Okay, so one abstention and one no.
And President DeBarra, I think Vice President Borja was referring to 2006. She lost her connection, so she was not able to vote on that particular resolution. She voted on 2005 and 2007, but not 2006.
Jeff, is it possible for us to go back
sure.
to 2006
yeah.
and ask
sure.
her to register
sure.
a vote?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Vice President Borja, on 2006, what is your vote?
I cast a no vote.
Mm-hmm. So please record that. Thank you. Okay, so that passes. So now the three have passed. And now I will turn it back over to Vice President Borja. You had a comment or a request?
Yes, my request is that we spend $30,000, 10% of the savings that we just had in the last three resolutions in Zone 3 to do voter education on the Desert Healthcare District and the election. There's roughly 60,000 people in this zone. That would be $2 per person. Normally, campaigns spend $4, $6, $8, $13, $15 per camp or per voter. I would like us to spend $2 per voter in District 3.
And can I, the problem is it's not on the agenda, but we can certainly bring it back to the board for consideration and maybe, you know, get out more specifics as to what the program would entail. I think that would be my recommendation.
Very good. Also, and I'll get to you right now, Director Zendel, if we could explain how the census, would we get the results back from the census in time to redistrict for in time for the next election, or is that after?
We will. The next election, we will have the census back before then, and we will do redistrict, adjust the districts before the 2022 election.
Director Zendel, you had your hand up.
Well, I was just going to suggest that perhaps some of the things that could be done, and this would have to be worked out by who's ever going to make the motion, is would we want to sponsor a candidate forum? Would we want to send out, put an ad in the paper announcing the election? I don't know exactly, but I think whatever motion comes back in September or sooner, if we had a sooner meeting, would have to spell out exactly how that money would be spent, and staff would have to be sort of prepared to do whatever it was the board wanted them to do.
Very good. I think that's what Jeff was thinking of when he said he wants more time to bring this back fully vetted. I see a hand from Director Shore.
In the same spirit of Dr. Vice President Borja's comment, I'd like to see the expenditure of funds expanded to all census tracts in the East Valley that are now part of our district. Not only as for all the obvious reasons related to census, but as a demonstration of continuity and integration with people who are joining our oversight.
So thank you very much for your comments. So we will now move on. I don't see any more hands up. Director Perez Gill, do you have any questions or comments before we move to the next item?
No, I don't, thank you.
Okay, very good. We will move on to the study session. Okay, and the study session was actually the purpose of this meeting, but I think it was important that we cover all those other items before we get to this important topic. And I want to start off by saying that even though we have expended an hour of our time on other topics, this next topic, the study session item, is an important topic, and I hope that you have cleared your calendar sufficiently to allow for enough time so that we will have an opportunity for our CEO, who will act as our facilitator, to walk us through this and allow for questions and anything that we need to get clarified, because this is really what we ask for as board members, to have a better understanding of our funding goals, our priorities, and how this would play out for the next fiscal year. So thank you all for making time for this important topic. And I forgot to mention one thing before we move to this item. Of course, here I am stretching it even longer for the other items. But I want to mention that I was very surprised when I got a call a couple of weeks ago from Director Matthews, who informed me that he was not going to be running for re-election. And I think that caught me by surprise because he has been someone that I have relied on, and we all have counted on to keep us on the straight and arrow. And I just want to make sure that he, even though I express my sentiments to him directly, I just wanted to say publicly that I have really appreciated all that he has done for the community in all the years of service, and especially this past year as being working with him on the board. So just wanted to say that again to him in public. So
thank you.
So now we will move on to the study session item. Oh, Andrea, you have a question?
I do, President Dallara, just a reminder, there was a question and a gentleman named Taylor Varner had a public comment for this particular agenda item.
Very good. Thank you very much for the reminder, Andrea. We do have a public comment, and I'm not sure when we would call on that person. So is Taylor, I'm not sure if that person indicated. So we'll go ahead and get started, but we will keep that in mind as to, and maybe that person could share a little bit more in the chat as to when that person wanted to make comments. And we will make sure that at some points during this that we open it up for questions, okay? And I'll turn it over to our CEO, Conrado.
Thank you, Madam President. Andrea, would you upload the... The PowerPoint.
Okay. Let's find that, just a moment.
If you want me, I can do it with the PowerPoint features rather than
a PDF. Sure, it might be easier that way you can slide when you're ready, if you like. So I'll stop share so that you can share. Do you have the PowerPoint handy?
I cannot share yet.
Okay. There we go. It's all you.
Screen sharing, yeah.
While we're waiting, thanks for all the attendees that are here. We have CVAC, a person representative from CVAC. Brett Klein is here from Eisenhower. Dieter Crawford is here representing the Desert Highland Gateway community. Nicole Hayton is here from the Desert Sun. Todd Burke, Linda Evans, DRMC. Ruth, I'm not sure who she is. Greg, of course. So thank you to those that have joined us.
I still cannot share, Andrea.
Okay, so I thought I made you the co-host. You should be able to. Let's try it again. Okay, do you see the share button now? Okay. Sorry.
Great. At one of the previous meetings, the board requested that we had this study session to look at our district and foundation grant making process. The objectives of today's meeting or this presentation, this study session, is to review the district grant making process, examine how the staff recommendations are formulated for this particular fiscal year, and to study the board approved overarching funding strategic goals. During this presentation, I will be offering some of these slides, and then the staff will also be presenting some of the slides depending on the content. So we will have Megan, who will provide an overview of some of these items. And then Alejandro at the end will provide a demonstration of how the grant making process works. So first we will start.
Before we go into that, Conrado, how do we want to do this? Are you okay with having board members ask questions throughout, or do you want us to wait until after each letter?
I believe that it would be best if we wait to the end and we can go back to slides. That is not a problem. Otherwise,
why don't we compromise and we do it after each letter?
Sure.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Starting with A, health. Well, I'll let you do it.
So the first is what considerations were included for our funding priorities. Number one, it was a gap year. As you may recall, we had a previous strategic plan that was from 2017 to 2020. It was going to expire on June 30th, 2020. That strategic plan had specific strategic goals related to access to primary care and behavioral health, homelessness, healthy eating, active living, and quality, safety, accountability, and transparency. As this strategic plan was ending, and we understood the need to have in-depth knowledge about the district, now that we have an expanded district, we launched ourselves into a community health needs assessment and a long-term health improvement plan. That work is ongoing. It has been slightly delayed because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but we're working on it. The result of that information is going to help inform our new strategic plan. And in an additional consideration for the future is understanding that there may be additional revenues and resources, and we will continue to work to that. In the middle of these two things, we had a gap year. And this is the fiscal year which we're in, the 2020-2021. And to make things even more complex, we had the COVID-19 pandemic outbreak that threw our nonprofit community into a challenging situation, and our community as a whole facing unprecedented challenges when it comes to their health and to the resources that are needed in our communities to keep people's well-being. The second consideration was the health and safety code. The health and safety code clearly defines what a healthcare district is and what we can and should not do. So we looked at the health and safety code, which is something that we always observe to do our work. And there is a document in the packet that you can refer to. We also consider the California Assembly Bill 2019, which became law in 2019, coincidentally, no pun intended. And this law, in particularly section number 3, prohibits against individual meetings regarding grant applications between a grant applicant and a district board member, officer, or staff outside of the district established grant award process. A district established a grant award process may include the provision of technical assistance to grant applicants, which is something that we include in our grant making process once a letter of interest has been submitted to us. Also, we observe prevailing wage law under California law. Any work paid for in whole or in part by public funds, including funds from the Desert Healthcare District, may require that workers be paid at the prevailing wage rates. A third consideration was the community input. We understood that the community was facing an unprecedented challenge. And in April of 2020, we launched a community outreach effort to document and assess the impact of COVID-19 was having in our community. And I will ask Megan to please walk us through these slides.
Yes, so many of you have seen the survey results before, but we just wanted to take out a couple of the things and highlight some of the areas that helped to inform and bring about the discussion of the gap year funding. If you go to the next slide, thank you. So just to reiterate, this came from 50 participants. It didn't, you know, it wasn't the entire valley. We had it open for a couple weeks, like Rado mentioned, in April. And the survey really helped the district staff to understand the reality of how COVID had and still has a large impact on our local organizations, and how that really in turn is being felt by our residents as they learn to adapt and change how they provide services for the increasing needs of the community. And a key one that we wanted to highlight again was just showing how important grants are to organizations in the Valley, and highlight that special events also played an important part. It was listed as one of the main secondary revenue sources, and as many of organizations' larger events that bring in a lot of funding have either been canceled or postponed or had to be adapted, you know, they're really looking for, make sure grants are available to them to represent the needs of the community as much as it can. So we tried to, you know, make sure that we have a gap year funding that is responsive to the community and what they really need and not what we think they need. Go to the next slide. And a couple things, one other thing we wanted to highlight was just some of the reasons for the financial impact, and to show that, you know, these are still very present as everything still has a lot of regulations and restrictions. And showing the graph on the left, how the percentage of organizational impact has been impacted. And this again was in April, so who knows what these numbers could be now. I'm sure they're a lot greater for some of the organizations, especially some of the smaller ones. And as you can see on the right, just highlighting some of the main reasons for financial impact was the increased demand for certain services and how to adapt to those by and still remaining you know, safe and following the requirements that have been placed on the state and nation, as well as closing of resale stores. A lot of things are still closed. Decreased memberships in certain facilities, reduced volunteers, shortened hours of operations, lost fee for services. Just highlighting that these are, you know, still very present in our community. And the last one that we just wanted to reiterate was some of the recovery plans that these organizations shared with us, things that they have to, you know, make changes to their organizations and adapt their services. A lot of people are converting to virtual services, looking for alternative ways to fundraise and really seeking out specific grants, cutting expenses wherever possible, increasing their case managers so they can get their community connected to different resources that are available. They'll collaborate and build meaningful partnerships with each other and learn how they can tackle certain subgroups or needs together with sometimes more limited resources. Preparing for possible second waves, not sure what's happening down the pipeline, and then continuing to increase outreach efforts. And getting the feedback from our local organizations really helped to inform these gap year funding. We tried to tie into those some of the things that were mentioned into our gap year, and it helped to further educate the staff in the district how we can support, you know, both non-traditional and traditional healthcare settings. And one of the things that we really took away from this is how important collaboration and strengthening organizational capacity is going to be in this year and for many years to come, and how we can help the community that way while still supporting the components and sticking to the, you know, what it means to be a healthcare district.
Then to continue with our considerations for how we came up with the funding priorities, the last consideration was the document that we shared with our board titled Equity, Fairness, Transparency, and Accountability. This was a document that was presented to the board in May. It was presented to the Strategic Planning Committee, to the Program Committee, and finally it was discussed in the Finance Committee, and at the board meeting it was presented, and that's what was included for the final considerations. The idea behind that document was to ensure that grant making was responsive to the needs of our community, to offer clear grant making guidance, and to simplify our grant making process. The website was updated to make it easier, to make it more user friendly for our community members to access our resources. So here we have the five strategic focus areas. Is there any questions that the board has up to this point?
Excuse me.
Director Perez-Gill, do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay, and Director Matthews, I'm
No, I don't.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Director Rogers has her hands raised, President DeLara.
Is she? Okay, I'm sorry, Director Rogers. You came back, and I thought I would have seen your hand, but I didn't. So I'm sorry, apologize. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I just wanted to reiterate where community input was highlighted as an important part of our decision-making, and that also includes the representatives from the community on our committees, our program and finance committees.
Thank you.
So the five areas that we recommended for strategic funding were, number one, healthcare infrastructure and services, and that's to ensure access to primary care, which was already included in our previous strategic plan. Second, it was behavioral health, mental health, which is also included in the previous strategic plan. And the third point was homelessness, which is also included in our previous strategic plan. There are two components that are added to our strategic goals, and these include vital human services to people with chronic conditions. This was a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and understanding that this is a community of people that is particularly susceptible to the lack of infrastructure in our public health system, and how we wanted to make sure that organizations that are providing vital human services to these communities have the resources to continue their work and to advance their mission and to protect these community of people that require special care. And finally, we understand that the outbreak of COVID-19 has created unprecedented economic pressures throughout the world, but here in Coachella Valley, it's particularly hard, and because our dependency on a number of industries, primarily the hospitality industry, that has been decimated nationwide. And many of our workers are now unemployed. They're facing the lack of resources to pay for the rent, for the food, for their day-to-day living expenses. So economic protection, recovery, and food security was an element that we wanted to make sure we're observing as we advance these new strategic focus areas. So here is the first one, the healthcare infrastructure, healthcare services. The goal here is to provide core operating support for community actions that improve health-related infrastructure through, one, increased access to healthcare for traditionally underserved population, two, increased number of mobile and portable medical units, and three, increased capacity to serve patients through telehealth technology. This is, again, a combination of what is in the law that we as a healthcare district should do, to what we have been doing as a healthcare district in our previous strategic plan, and three, what the community is telling us. There is a new reality. There is no longer the ability of our community clinics to provide face-to-face encounters, or those are limited, and increasing the capacity to serve patients through telehealth technology is important. Also providing a number of mobile and portable
medical units to provide services to isolated communities. Primarily, I'm thinking right now, one example is the farm workers community. That's a community that requires taking services to them. And finally, to increase access to healthcare for traditionally underserved populations. So this is the number one strategic focus area for the district. And the funding allocation here that was approved by the board was 1.5 million. The second item also, this comes from the-
Can we pause on here, Conrado, before you move to the next one?
Yes.
Does anybody, any of the board members have any comments or questions on any of this items before we move on to the next one? Hands, okay, Director Zendel.
I just wanted to make the point that obviously, you know, we have these four buckets and I'm really glad we're explaining them so we better understand them. But if you know, as the year goes by and we find that certain funds aren't being used in one bucket, we don't have to do anything other than review grants to use the funds from another bucket, or in other words, overuse the funds in another bucket if one bucket is being underused. In other words, these are kind of guidelines. They're there for us to sort of say, this is how we'd like the year to look, but it requires a grant to come forward to through the program committee and to the board to get approved before money comes out from this allocation. And it doesn't take, I don't think it should take an action by the board to adjust those buckets if we're already looking at the grants coming forward and say we do or we don't want them. The other point I wanted to make is that I did attend the community forum that was a few weeks ago, and somebody brought up a great point, and that's that a grant that they're working on may actually have elements that hit a couple of these big buckets. Like somebody mentioned using telemedicine or mobile units in behavioral health. In other words, it may not all fit into one bucket, and therefore that allows us to flexible in terms of what we're doing. So I just wanted to make those points. I don't know if anybody disagrees with me on those, but I wanted to make those points.
Thank you, Director Zendel. Director Rogers, you had your hand up.
I do, thank you. I guess I need some more clarification of the meaning infrastructure. You know, in terms of cities and counties, that means bridges and roads. So in healthcare, what does that mean?
In healthcare, that means the tools, the funding, the capacity that our community clinics or community partners require to continue to provide services to our community. So it could be, for example, when we're talking about telehealth technology, the use of a new technology that they may require, computers, cameras, a room, software, those things are considered to be infrastructure.
Very good. Thank you, Director Rogers.
Conrado, this might be an unanswerable question, but if you were to aggregate the operating budgets of all the agencies in the Coachella Valley that provide healthcare infrastructure services, what would that be? And that was the denominator of a fraction, and our funding allocation was the numerator of that fraction. Can you estimate what the denominator of the fraction would look like by estimating the aggregate of all the budgets that serve this agenda? Just out of-
we might be a 0.3%.
3%. You're estimating about 3% impact on the overall financial consumption of funds or use of funds. Okay, thank you. That gives me a sizing, an order of magnitude of what we're impacting. Thank you.
Before I go back to Director Zendo, I'm going to ask if Director Matthews has any questions, since I can't see him. Director Perez-Gill, do you have any questions or comments on this?
No, not at this time. Thank you.
Okay, back to Director Zendo.
I mean, I would just make the point that when we're talking about infrastructure, if you include all infrastructure, you have to include the hospitals and things like that. But I think if we limit it to the infrastructure that serves underserved populations, it's a lot smaller than that. And it may be 3 or 4 or 5%, I don't know, but we've got $1 billion worth of hospital infrastructures in the Valley here. So I wouldn't want to include that in your denominator, Arthur.
Okay, very good. Then we'll move on to the next item, Conrado.
For the record, I was on mute, Director.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. And did you have any questions?
I didn't, but thank you for asking. Okay.
Thank you. The next item is behavioral health, mental health. This is also included in our previous strategic plan. The goal here is to explore how funds from the Mental Health Services Act can be leveraged and aim at improving access to behavioral health services by maintaining the number of mental health urgent care facilities or crisis stabilization units, increased telepsychiatry capacity to increase access to mental health services, aid the 5150s and assist REACH and CREST teams, increased number of educators that receive training certification in mental health first aid, to increase the number of college and school counselors to meet the standard for one counselor per 1,000 to 1,500 students, increase the number of peer mental health educators. Part also of these recommendations came from the EBAL Core report that we commissioned and that was presented to the board a few months ago. Also understanding that behavioral health is going to be, it's already deeply affected by all the challenges that our community is facing from a behavioral standpoint, the physical isolation, the lack of socialization, the diminished ability to be in contact with your family members, with your friends, people losing their jobs, kids unable to attend school, people in fear of losing their homes. This is a very important component of where I believe the district should be supporting our community. I also want to highlight that we have already an allocation in our foundation for behavioral health, and that this allocation that was recommended of $500,000 is being added to that allocation related to behavioral health and mental health.
Any questions from board members? Questions, comments? I don't see any hands. Director Matthews?
No, thank you.
Okay, Director Rogers, I see your hand.
Thank you. So I'm trying to figure out how much left in our budget for behavioral health, mental health services. I know that we put up $1 million fund, so this is in addition, I understand. We're in the process of hiring a behavioral health person to assist the district with these services, I'm assuming. Conrado?
Yes. So the existing allocation was 2 million, of which we have spent about 50,000. So this adds to that, and our total budget is 2,450,000, if I'm not incorrect.
Thank you. Thanks for correcting my math.
Okay. Director Perez-Gill?
I don't have any comments right now. Thank you.
my comment is on the first sentence is explore how funds from the MHSA can be leveraged and aimed. So this is contingent on that, the 500,000 that we really want to connect it to MHSA. Is that what that is, or
can you? No, it is. It is not. It is not contingent on that. I think that we wanted to include that language to make sure that we're reminding ourselves constantly that we should be working with the county and we should be exploring ways in which these funds can work as catalyst for MHSA funding from the county.
Okay, thank you. And I think Director Rogers brought up the position that we are hoping to fill in the future, that when that person comes on board, that he or she would be able to maybe at that point look for opportunities for us to do this much better and more frequently. So thank you for pointing that out. Director Zendois, your hand?
Yeah, I got a text message from Greg Rodriguez reminding me to remind everybody that in a couple of weeks, Roy's will be opening with 96 behavioral health care inpatient beds. And that is something sorely needed in the community, and we can kind of work with that too in this infrastructure.
Thank you. Okay, so I don't see any other hands from any board members. We can move on to the next one, Comrade.
The next one is homelessness. Again, this is coming from the existing strategic plan, previous strategic plan, to seek to leverage and match other funds. It will support the ongoing CBAG, CB Heart activities, including cooling centers, case management, wraparound services, community outreach. The funding allocation would be an additional 500,000, which is added to the Homelessness Initiative Collective Fund. We have included a document for your reference, which is the CB Heart document that it's in the packet.
Very good. Questions, comments from board members on this one item, starting with Director Zendel.
Could you just clarify how much is left in the collective fund that this gets added to?
We were reviewing those numbers recently. Donna, can you remind me how much do we have left, or Chris?
I want to say 700,000, but yeah. I have to double check with Chris.
Yes, I believe it was between 700,000 and 730,000. So this will be 1.2 million, give or take, Director Zendel.
Hey, Director Zendel, do you have any other questions?
No.
Hey, Director Rogers.
It's to support the ongoing CB Heart activities, including CBAG's CB Heart activities are looking at a multitude of homelessness issues and problems. Is this something, can this list be expanded?
I believe so. And the way that we have been working is working closely with Director Rodriguez. We look to him for recommendations. And that's what we're trying to accomplish here, is to have a collective impact approach so that we are not funding isolated efforts. We're trying to make this a collective effort because homelessness is something that affects almost every city in our valley. And I believe it behooves the district and behooves our community to have that collective impact lens.
Director Rogers, did you have another question or comment?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Okay, Director Matthews, questions? I'm sorry, I do see you, so
I yeah, no. Okay.
Director Perez Gill?
I have no comments at this time, thank you.
Okay, we do have a comment from the public on this item. Taylor DeBall Barner. Taylor?
Go ahead, Taylor. You have
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, Great. Yes. Good evening, directors. My name is Taylor Leibolt Varner. I am the regional affordable housing planner with Lifterize. This is a role that was born out of a partnership with the County of Riverside. I'm new to the organization as of this year, and I'm really excited. The role is to work with the cities and the county, as well as our cross-sector network of partners, to coordinate a regional response to the housing crisis. I first just want to commend the district for its support of this effort in the past, as well as the support of the United Lift Rental Assistance Program, also in partnership with the county, and for recognizing the importance of keeping people housed amid the pandemic. And I'm here just to say that as you discuss your process and your strategies, particularly around the issues of health, homelessness, and economic protection, I just want to emphasize the importance of improving housing affordability and stability as a means of addressing these issues. We know that housing is a core driver, and the lack of affordability is the leading cause of homelessness, and that housing stability is also a key determinant of a person's health and well-being, economic opportunity, and educational attainment, and other factors. And as a cross-sector collaborative, we are doing everything we can to advance housing stability for all in the Coachella Valley by radically increasing the supply of affordable housing by 10,000 units. Just recognizing that if a person and that families have places to live, their other social determinants are greatly improved. And we encourage you to consider the long-term solutions in addressing these issues, which the supply of affordable housing represents, and as a way of achieving positive outcomes for all, in all of your strategies, really. So I just want to thank you for allowing me to speak and for this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I don't see any more hands from board members, so I will turn it back over to our CEO.
Excuse me, Greg Rodriguez has his hand raised.
Oh, okay. Greg, you have a question or comment?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. I was kind of going to wait to the end, but I think it fits in perfectly here. And again, happy to answer any questions. But to address Carol's point is, you could add in here already, Carol, the CV Housing First program that the district has been completely supportive of in the last couple of years, the matching funds, et cetera. So this definitely can expand. To Conrado's point, and I've worked really closely with district staff to make sure that we're looking at this as a collaborative and collective impact model that he referenced. I really, again, to Taylor's point, want to thank the district for not only laying out this vision, but also just their ongoing support of the collaborative efforts that we've been doing. Their funding has been critical, and it's not just a West Valley focus. That's kind of what CVAG Homeless Committee was originally developed on, but this really has become an overall valley-wide approach, and because we know homelessness touches everybody from Thermal Oasis all the way up to Desert Hot Springs and Palm Springs. Les brought up the great point too about how as we look at grant opportunities and funding of these buckets, is many of these cross-sector, and that is especially true with the collaborative. All five areas are issues that I deal with on a daily basis when it comes to behavioral health, when it comes to economic protection, when it comes to healthcare infrastructure. Many of you are aware I'm taking over, effective actually tomorrow, as the chair of the continuum of care for the county. And what I'm really trying to focus on is how we look at the healthcare component of homelessness. What we've really seen in the Project Room Key, which has housed over 600 people in hotel rooms countywide and over 190 in the valley alone, is the extreme need for healthcare access. And so how do we look at this on a broader continuum of effectively treating homelessness on a healthcare level, not just on substance abuse and behavioral health, but also physical health as well. I also too is all five buckets really address the social determinants of health. And when it comes to homelessness, we know people are on the verge of homelessness. We know that social determinants of health affect people in housing. I would definitely concur with Taylor that as we go forward, the district and in collaboration with other funders looks at long-term impacts and how we improve our stock of affordable housing to make sure that one, we're preventing homelessness, but also additionally having the units for all of our service providers who are doing amazing outreach work, connecting people to services, but have units to actually permanently place people. And that is an extreme deficit, as all of you know on this call. I'll end it with there. And again, if any questions need to be answered, I'm more than happy to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. And just to reiterate what Director Zendel said at the very beginning, that these buckets are just a place for us to start, but the flexibility to be able to not only move money between them, but also to draw down on other resources when the board feels it's necessary. So thank you. Conrado, back to you.
The next one is serving the human services to people with chronic conditions. And again, this is to support this important and at-risk community by strengthening organizational capacity, increased level of services to meet increased demands post COVID-19, support organizations undergoing organizational mergers, and increasing the number of case managers to support the needs of this community, which typically tend to be more complex and require more handholding to find solutions to their challenges. I want to highlight that we included something here in anticipation of something that may happen, and that was exposed by the survey that we asked the community to complete. And that's number three, organizations may be facing such severe financial challenges that in order to continue to advance their missions, they may be forced to seek a merger with another, with similar organizations to find ways to streamline their operations, have cost savings, and to continue to advance their missions. So we wanted to have some flexibility here to address the organizational challenges that some of them may face.
Thank you. Questions from the board? You could raise your hand. Hey, Director Rogers.
Yes, can you give an example of how we can strengthen organizational capacity? And I get increasing number of case managers, but can you organizational
capacity? Let me paraphrase your question, Director Rogers. You want me to explain how we can support the organizational capacity, correct?
No, I just want you to give me an example of what that would look like.
An example of organizational capacity could be, for example, one of the organizations serving seniors, that they need the funding to hire case managers, to launch a new service to provide services to seniors, and they don't have the resources for that. So in that case, I believe the district is in a good position to support financially the continuation of those services to strengthen their capacity. Also, they face the challenge of, we need to rethink our strategy and how we develop funding. So they may request funding to hire a consultant who might tell them, this is a line of service, this is a line of revenue that you can secure, and you can modify your services, you can lean your organization in this direction, so that you remain relevant and you have the financial resources to continue advancing your mission and serving seniors, for example.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from board members on this topic? Director Perez?
No.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay, so Conrado, you can move on.
The next one is the economic protection, recovery, and food security. And the goal that we recommended here was to provide needed support in areas of distress. And we're talking about economic distress by sustaining ongoing efforts by our collaborative partners, promoting community collaborations and regional work around these efforts, and increase case management at food pantries through measurable food security, self-sufficiency, and quality of diet. We talked about trying to promote a collaboration between different sectors that provide services to a targeted population. We talked about the concept of service caravans. Many times in the food pantry, food distribution operations, there is a congregation of people that have many necessities, not only the need for food, but the additional need for financial resources, for rent assistance, for healthcare, enrollment in a health insurance plan. And what we foresee with this is a collaborative approach, again, to address the multiple needs of one person that comes attached to their family and to the community. And the funding allocation for this bucket that we've recommended was $500,000.
Any questions or comments? Okay, starting with Director Rogers.
Thank you. I think we should also add nutrition education. For instance, I know of the Veterans Home in Desert Hot Springs was requesting food donations, but they said no beans. And they, you know, people don't know that beans are good for you and how to cook them and how to make them a wonderful nutritional part of your diet. So I would like to add nutrition education to the goal.
Good. Any other questions or comments from board members? Director Perez Gil, question?
I don't have any comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Conrado?
Thanks. And finally, the last bucket was related to our foundation funding. Again, the recommendation here was maximizing the capacity of our foundation to leverage additional resources to act as a catalyst to attract additional funding into our community and to cultivate additional resources that we can distribute among our grant seekers, community partners, and organizations that work with the district to advance our mission. We promoted here a collective impact approach and community collaboration. And the funding allocation here, although it's $600,000, it can be multiplied. One example that I just raised earlier this evening was the fact that we allocated $400,000 to advance access to primary care for Black members in our community. And we were able to leverage another $100,000 from a partner organization. So instead of having $400,000 that we can provide in support of our Black community, we now have $500,000. So that's the emphasis of allocating these resources into the foundation.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from board members on this, this topic? The Director Perez Gil?
No.
The word that keeps coming up over and over again on each one of them is collaboration. And I think that that is key because we can't do it on our own. The district is a leader in this area, of course, but collaboration with other funders and with other service providers, I think that's key. So thank you for including that throughout your document. And Maro, where are you taking us next?
Thank you. So this concludes the allocation, these five strategic goals allocation. What I wanted to showcase here is where we are today, where we want to be, and what is the gap. We want to make sure that we're applying evidence, that we are preparing our staff internally to respond to the challenges and needs in our communities, to have a deep community engagement and an education, a process that we started, and Director Sendel participated in that meeting where we met with about 100 members of our community to explain how the process of grant making works for the Desert Healthcare District. We want to document outcomes and to apply this collaborative impact model. We actually have started conversations with Donna, can you remind me, please, the name of the organization to do
Clear Impact Results-Based Accountability.
Exactly, with Clear Impact to develop our result-based accountability in our grant process. So those are things that we will be bringing to the attention of the board as we continue to work on those and to make better stewards of funding that we are entrusted with by our community. Finally, as I mentioned, we had the community engagement and education on August 10th. That was a webinar. It was very well attended. And I would like to invite Alejandro Espinosa, our Director of Community Outreach, to provide a brief summary of this and also to then lead us into a demonstration of how the grant making works in our website.
Wonderful. Thank you, Corrada. Hello, board and attendees. Just an overview of our community engagement and education webinar that we had. With a lot of the changes that we had established with our grants program, we wanted to ensure that our community partners were informed of the new requirements, forms, and also the new website that we had redesigned. So we wanted to host this webinar and provide them with a brief presentation and also an opportunity for a question and answer moment for them to ask very specific questions. Obviously, they couldn't ask program or project related questions due to AB 2019. And that was something that we reiterated, multiple times throughout, the presentation. But as Conrado mentioned, during the presentation, we discussed a couple of points. We discussed about the history and about the district and foundation, including, the expansion to encompass one Coachella Valley. We also talked about our community health needs assessment and our community health improvement plan and how this is going to future inform, our grant making for years to come beyond this year. We also talked about and showed them and shared with them some information on the COVID survey that Megan shared with you earlier in this presentation. We also talked about the gap year funding strategic focus areas that Conrado just concluded presenting to you. And we talked about the grant making process from, application, where do they find, what are these forms, and where do they could find all of these on our website. And if Andrea could give me share capabilities, I will go ahead and share with you our website. Okay. Hopefully, can everybody see now the website?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. So I'm on our homepage, our website, dhcd.org. On the right-hand side, we click on the right on the menu. We have a grants tab that once I click on that, it's going to give me three options. The first one is for a grants program, and that's what I'll cover at this time. So our new grants program, we redesigned the page to make it a little bit easier for our potential grantees to follow and find relevant information that has been presented to you as part of this presentation. Some of the things that we have are our grants policy. It also has a hyperlink to our full policy. If anybody is interested in reading that, they're able to get the full board approved policy OP-5. We also have the prevailing wage law information. As Conrado mentioned to you earlier in the presentation, anybody, any grantee has to ensure that any of their employees or subcontractors are being paid the prevailing wage law. We also include in here this very important information about California Assembly Bill AB 2019 to ensure them and inform them that, you know, grant staff and Desert Healthcare District staff and board cannot communicate with them prior to them submitting a letter of interest. Once a letter of interest is submitted, then we are able to have conversations with the potential grantee and also provide them technical assistance as needed. Another thing that we have here is just, you know, the very basic information about what are the types of grants that are available. We have the mini grants, as all of you know, that are available up to $5,000 per one request in a fiscal year. And those for our smaller organizations that do not have any audited financials. And then we also have here our grants and more information about who is eligible, who is not eligible, the requirements for them to actually be an applicant for our grant funds. So once they review this information and says, you know what, we do have an interest in applying for either a mini grant or a full grant, then they would go to this section here. They will click either one of the two buttons. I'll start with the mini grant first. So we click on the mini grant, and now it's going to give me, you know, the steps here on how do I apply for a grant. The first one being if they are a new grantee, they need to establish a user account on our grant management software, which is Blackbaud. And if they are a returning applicant, then they will just skip to the second step. On the second step, we ask them to complete a letter of interest. And then within the letter of interest, we also have a hyperlink here to give them a little bit more information about what is included within the new letter of interest that we have implemented. And let me know if this opens and if you could see it. Can you guys see this new page that opened?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, wonderful. So within the mini grant guidelines, so we say that here in the section, you know, letting them know about the information that we are asking for as part of the mini grant letter of interest. So it includes basic information about the organization, the primary contact, the program project information, including the project title, the project start and end date, the length of the program, the requested amount and project budget, the background of the program / community need. And how does this, you know, request fit within one of our five key strategic funding areas that Conrado just presented to you. And we have them here, and they were able to select one of the main categories and one of the subcategories as well. And continuing here, the last thing that we have on the letter of interest for the mini grant is just a brief description of the program, project, and the specific use of district grant funds and its alignment to the strategic focus area. So that is the letter of interest for the mini grant. If we go back to the main page here, it also provides them, you know, resources for the budget that we request for them to actually use our own budget template. And that's just to ensure that we have, you know, a uniform budget across all of the grants that are going to be coming to us. Once we actually have that information, the application itself, and we deem that this is a good fit for or a good use for our grant dollars, we provide them with the second stage, which is the mini grant application. And once again, we do have a link here that's going to let them know what are the other components that are going to be included in the mini grant application. And this is going to be very simple information like geographic area served, description of residents who will benefit from the program / project, the age group, the population served, and the total number, unduplicated of district residents to be served, And also that we want them to share with us what are those key strategic partnerships that they're going to be, creating in order to roll out this program out in the community. And then, as you know, we review this, the grants team will review the information and we will give our recommendation to our chief executive officer, Conrado. And then at that point, he would review, then either approve or decline the request. Once the grant is approved, then the internal staff, we will work with our grantee to finalize logistics such as the contracts, deliverables, payment schedules, and reporting. And as you can see here, we also have a link for different resources like the budget instructions and also the budget template. And I'll stop here for any questions on the mini grant application process.
All right. I don't see any hands. Director Perez Gil.
No, I don't have any questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, we have a question. We have a question from Director Ashore.
Alejandro, just how many new organizations or new applications are you, do you tend to receive on a yearly basis from organizations who have not connected with us in the past?
I would say there are very few, Director Shore, since we have a small area here in the Coachella Valley, but we expect that possibly a larger amount this year, since this is the first year that we're actually providing access to East Valley organizations that are within the newly annexed area to the district. So we foresee that we might have an increase in the applications or the asks for both the mini grant and the grants because of the newly expanded area.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Director Rogers.
Yes, thank you. Alejandro, you can go through the entire web, all the grants. Are you?
Can you restate it, please? We lost you.
Oh, I wanted to know if now is the time to ask questions about the entire grant process. Or is Alejandro going to continue with the entire process?
He's going to continue with the next step.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll wait until we're done.
Wonderful.
Okay, Alejandro, here goes.
Okay. Great. Okay, so continuing on here, still on our main grants program page. So I just went through the process for applying for a mini grant. And now for the grant application, we'll click on that link once again. And same flow, same steps. Obviously, on a full grant, we also have additional steps, which are the program committee approval process, and then the recommendation to the board coming from the program committee. So once again, the first step is for the potential grantee to, if they're a new one, to start to create a user account on Blackbaud if they're returning. Directly skipping to the second step. Here, the letter of interest, once again, we do have the hyperlink that it's gonna open up to a very specific process on the items that we're gonna be asking for within the letter of interest. And once again, it's gonna include very basic information about the organization, the primary contact, the project, program/project information, including project title, project start and end date, the length of the program, the requested amount and program budget or project budget, background of the program/project and community need. Once again, the alignment to one of our new 5 strategic focus areas. The description of the program/project and the specific use of district grant funds and its alignment to the strategic focus area. The geographical area where the program will be implemented, the description of the target population or populations, the age group, and the total number of unduplicated district residents to be served. And then something that we added this year was section number 3, which was diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we want to ask our potential applicants, you know, how does your organization address diversity, equity, and inclusion at the board and executive staff levels? And the follow-up question to that, if they do not follow that, what are some of the barriers that are limiting them from actually addressing some of these diversity, equity, and inclusion within, you know, the board and executive staff levels? And some of those things could include knowledge, financial investment, capacity, etc. So this is all the information that is included, that is asked for in the letter of interest for the full grant. Going back, we also provide them once again the budget template, the grant application here. Okay, so at this stage, once we actually, you know, receive the letter of interest, you know, at that time the grant staff will schedule a site visit or a Zoom meeting in this case with the applicant to kind of discuss, you know, the letter of interest. Maybe at that time the grant staff will have questions or maybe some points of clarification that we would need to be addressed, that would need to be addressed by the potential applicant. Then once we feel that some of those questions have been answered or some of those pre-qualifications have been met, then we will recommend that we'll provide them with the second stage, which is the full grant application. And once again, we have a link here that will share with them what are the items that are now going to be included in the grant application. So here, we're actually going to be adding our goals and evaluation, which are goals that are SMART goals that are specific, measurable, ambitious, realistic, and time-bound. The evaluation itself of those goals, the proposed program slash project evaluation plan. The second section will be the capacity and the sustainability of the organization itself and the key partnerships that they establish, and an executive summary, pretty much, you know, summarizing the whole grant application itself. And then here, so once we do all that due diligence, then that's when staff creates our staff reports. We provide, you know, we get all of the financial documentation that's going to be graded using our grant scoring rubric that also has been updated. So I'll share that with you all. So our new grant application scoring rubric, we're going to be scoring this grant on a 100-point scale. And I want to, you know, make clear that this is not the only tool that we're going to be utilizing to review and approve grants, but this is one of many that we're going to be utilizing. So within the application, grant application scoring rubric, we look at the executive summary, the community need alignment, the goals, the proposed program slash project evaluation plan, the applicant capacity and infrastructure to execute the proposal, the organizational sustainability, the budget, the key partners and collaboration, and then Chris and Eric, our fiscal team, will be actually scoring the fiscal review section, which will be the fiduciary compliance and the financial stability. So this is all part, and this is something that the potential applicants could download directly from our website in case they need guidance while they're writing their either LOI or their grant application. So once we receive all that information, we put everything in a packet that is presented at the program committee. And that's where we invite, you know, the potential applicant to come and, you know, be part of the program committee meeting, where their grant is up for review, to answer any specific questions that our program committee members might have about, you know, the grant application. And then once, you know, the conversation and the vote there at the program committee level is made, then we either send up the grant application to the full board for approval. You know, sometimes there are some edits that need to be made. And then once again, it goes to the board, or we ask for a full resubmittal with, you know, with major modifications, or we outright decline the application. And the fifth step is our board of directors meeting, where, you know, the program committee will make the recommendation to the board. you know, to once again either approve the grant application, approve the grant application with minor modifications or edits, resubmit the grant application with major modifications and or edits, or outright decline the grant application. Okay. And lastly, the grant approval process. Once again, staff will work with the grantee, with the potential grantee, working on logistics such as contracts, deliverables, payment schedules, and reporting. And lastly, here's the grant reporting. And we do provide them, you know, a link for them to actually click on so they could actually report on their either progress report, which is a 6-month report if it's a 1-year grant, or a final report as well. And once again, here on the left-hand side, we do have additional resources for them, which are the budget instructions, the budget template, and the program / project cash flow analysis. Any questions?
Okay, Carol, Director Rogers.
Thank you. Let me get my list out. you mentioned that once applicant submits a letter of interest, then staff can start a discussion with them, but not before. But what is our outreach going to look like? How do we make people aware? How do we let organizations be aware that what the process is and how they can apply?
That's a great question, Director Rogers. And I think the first step was hosting the webinar that we did on August 10th. Will did send out a constant contact to a large mailing list that we have in our database to inform them of, you know, that we were going to have this webinar. In addition to that, as you can see here on the left-hand side, we did record the webinar, and we also provided, you know, a document of the questions, frequently asked questions. And we got some of those questions that were asked during the webinar and put them in a document that is going to be available to all, you know, potential grantees here on our website. And so those were the primary methods that we have done outreach for this particular time. But beyond that's a board decision, and I believe also that needs to happen if that's something that we would want to do in the future.
Director Rogers, do you have any other questions?
Thank you. You know, I have about 3 more.
Okay.
I know at one time I asked if we knew what other healthcare districts were doing that had foundations and grant making abilities, what they were doing for outreach. I'd be interested to know, you know, what kind of innovative ideas are out there. I know that one healthcare district does a monthly, you know, I'm just sort of thinking outside the box. So I just offered that as an idea, and I'd love to hear back from staff or you know, or Jeff, what's available, what other healthcare districts are doing for outreach. The other question is that I noted that we added the ability to assist nonprofits with their audit. Because the grants, the main grants require an audit report, and the district is now offering that capability. Is that anywhere in the website that explains that?
Carol, actually, if you jump onto our grant policy, it does explain that what the parameters are, and then we also have in our Q&A that for more additional details to contact staff. And then we'll be more than happy to go through what the actual process is for getting an audit done. But it is on our grant policy, OP number 5.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have for now.
Other board members have a question or a comment?
No.
I have two comments. One is, if you go to page 126 of 158, I don't know if we can go to it very, I won't waste our time to, but just if you could go to it, it is a little bit contradictory to what I've heard in this presentation, and at the very top, it says staff is available to grantees for technical support both before, during, and after the grant process. So is that correct, even though we have AB 2019?
That is correct, because the grant yes. process begins with the letter of interest. So once okay. they submit the letter of interest, then that's before they actually do the grant application, then we then legally we can discuss okay, discuss perfect. The proposal.
Thank you for that. The other thing is on our website where we have our initiatives, I would like you to consider adding some of our newer initiatives, like the air quality issue and the Black Lives Matter initiative. If you could kind of consider what else, and those things just come to mind, but I think that we're doing other things that are more of a special project kind of a thing. If we can consider adding that in there. But those are my only two comments. Thank you. Oh, and I see a hand from Director Zendel.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Conrado and the staff for setting aside this time. I think it's been incredibly helpful. It shows really how much progress the district has made in just the last couple of years, but especially in the last year, in defining our grant process, publicizing it, making it easily accessible. The fact that we had, 80 to 100 people attending the public webinar shows that we're getting the word out there. And again, I encourage us as a board to maybe, not too often, but maybe twice a year, sit down and look at the buckets and look at what the grants that are coming out. And if for no other reason, to familiarize ourselves as to what's going on and maybe make suggestions to the staff if we want. But this was a very good process. And even though I had been through this slideshow before, every time I go through it, I learn a lot, which is why I think we need to do repetition and understand what's going on. So thank you.
I agree. Thank you, Director Zendel. And Donna.
Yes, to comment Dr. Zendel's comment is also what we are, one of our goals is by learning this results-based accountability and clear impact, is that we will actually be creating dashboards so that we can mark our progress and mark our progress on the different buckets and what grants are going out, so we can see where a lot of funding is required and where maybe there's no funding that's required. So that would be able to give us the opportunity to track our impact that way as well.
And I can see a lot of this work being done in the program committee, but periodically we need to spend some quality time on the board to go through this. Sometimes things get lost in a board report that kind of goes through the minutes, and then we take time going through the grants that are before us. But again, I think it's worth for the entire board to sit down twice a year maybe and go through all this.
Thank you for your comments. Conrado, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. And I think I want to thank Alejandro for walking us through this part of the conversation. And I think finally, what I would like to do is to ask the question about, have we met the objectives of this meeting, of this presentation? I want to gather, I believe Dr. Zendel started giving us some feedback on that, but since we posed these questions at the beginning, I want to make sure that we're meeting the objectives of this presentation.
You met my objectives. You met my objectives. I have a healthier respect for the dimension of what we're doing. Thank you.
Director Rogers, I'm going to call on you individually, okay?
Okay. No, I'm good. Thank you. You've answered all my questions. I really appreciate excellent presentation.
Director Matthews?
Great presentation, a good process. And over the years, the grant process has gone from not as well organized to where anyone can access via the website or the staff, the methods to apply, and the types of initiatives that we think are important. So I think it's a terrific objective set up for us to give to the public and those who are seeking. Really nice job.
Thank you. Director Perez Gill.
I think everybody did a good job. It's very explicit on the way it's explained, and I really enjoyed going over it with Alejandro and Conrado and everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Zendel.
I already spoke.
Well, you don't want to add anything else? I'm giving you your last chance. Okay, we're moving on.
It's never my last chance, but no. Okay.
Vice President Borja.
Yes, thank you all for the information you've shared and the questions you've answered. One of the things that has happened at least three times in the last year and a half has been that organizations that like somehow can't fit or don't fit through like the process end up calling me, and I just end up sending them over to Donna. I think this is like very clear, simple way, like please go back to our website. All the information is there. If you have further questions beyond our website, please contact the healthcare district staff. But yeah, I think this will alleviate just people's confusion about our process, where the grant is. Like it's clear, it's colorful, it's user-friendly, at least on the website. I'd like to know if it's user-friendly on like people's phones. Just randomly thought about that. But yeah, other than that, yes, this answers questions that I had and then questions that I've gotten from nonprofits trying to go through our process or not being able to go through our process. So thank you, staff.
And circling back to me, I concur with everyone's comments. This was very comprehensive, and I appreciate all the work that everyone took to really make it step by step and give us all of better understanding and appreciation of what we have to work with. So thank you, everyone. And thank you all, the board, for giving us your attention and your time this evening to cover this.
Thank you.
Laura, we have a public comment.
Oh, okay. And who is, can you please introduce yourself? And you have 3 minutes.
We have two public comments. Go ahead, Greg.
Of course, it's me. I just want to reiterate what every board member has just said. I've been involved with the district for over 4, 5, 6 years now, you know, starting with Raul and the whole expansion discussion and all that. And I just want to say over the last year, the leadership of Conrado, the staff is incredible. As I referenced earlier, and just the whole development of this homelessness collaborative and housing and affordable housing is, you all should be very proud of the staff you have. And I just also too want to give a big shout out to you as directors on your leadership and how you've really made this a valley-wide focus even before we expanded the districts. And I'm really looking forward to the progress we're making. We really are truly a leader regionally, and we could not be that way without the district. And so I want to thank you, and I really look forward to the opportunities and the successes going forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And I forgot to congratulate you for being elected the chair of the Continuum of Care. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. I'm not sure what I'm getting involved in, but thank you.
Too late to back down. Okay, the next person, if you can identify yourself, and you have 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Andrea and President DeLara and board members. I'll be brief. My name is Carmina Zavala, and I'm running for District 3. Please note your meeting was very informative, especially the study session. I look forward to learning more and being in contact with all of you. A little bit about my background. I'm a mental health professional. I work for San Gregorio Memorial Hospital. I practice in Palm Springs at the outpatient clinic, And I've been in healthcare for 19 years. So thank you again. And I look forward to one day contributing to your important message and as a colleague and a partner. So thank you all.
Thank you, Carmina. Is there anybody else in the public, Andrea?
No, there are no other hands raised. That is it.
Very good. Then I'll turn it back over to Conrado, but you have a hand up from Alejandro.
Yeah, I just want to also give kudos to, forgot to mention this, to Will. You know, he spent countless hours with GraphTech working on the design of our of the website, and you know, we gave him, there were countless revisions of the documents. So just wanted to extend, you know, and just ensure that we recognize the work that Will put behind, you know, the website itself.
Thank you.
Thank you for remembering. Conrado?
Thank you. I just wanted to say that all this work is thanks to a collaborative effort within the district. The leadership of the board is very important because it drives the direction of in which we're working. And everybody on the staff has contributed to this work, to this body of work, to make this a process that it's user-friendly, that it's clear, and that it's following and respecting the letter of the law, at the same time that we offer flexibility and that we are being a member in the community that the community look to for finding the resources that they need to do their work. I want to thank everyone on the staff that contributed to this, from the program side to the administrative side, and also to Jeff, who guided big components of this process to ensure that we're following the letter of the law and that we're in compliance with all the regulations that that exist to protect our work. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for leading us all in the right direction. Okay, so it is now 7:29. So unless someone has something else to add, I'll give you a chance to raise your hand. But otherwise, I'm not seeing any hands. I will adjourn the meeting. I have a hand.
I just want to remind everyone, because we have been dark, that we have a program committee that is coming up on September the 8th. We have an F&A committee on September the 8th. And I believe we are going to have an upcoming hospital lease and oversight committee meeting as well. And then our workshop will take place at the end of the month.
What about strategic planning, Andrea? Could you kind of go through all the, not today, but send an update to all of us about the meetings in September? That'd be great.
Absolutely. I just need to speak to Conrado. I'm not sure if we're going to have the strategic planning committee meeting on the 8th, but we will certainly let you know ahead of time.
But you've got the placeholders there, so if we're not going to have them, it'd be nice to release it.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Stay safe, everyone. Bye.
Bye.